Welcome to Beat the Block, a podcast powered by BeatStars, the world's number one marketplace to buy and sell beats.
This is a show where we go deeper than the surface and talk about the best producers and artists in the game, not just about their successes, but also the blocks, dark times, mental health, and unpaid work that comes along with it.
More importantly, we find out they bounce back and turn their downsides into upsides to make a career out of doing what they love so you can too.
Get ready to experience this episode of Beat the Block. What's good, everybody? It's your friendly neighborhood, Ill Brown.
What's good? It's your man, Trox.
And this is your girl, Candy.
And you are live with the Beat the Block podcast, quarantine edition. I mean, everyone is quarantine edition, I guess, at this point, correct? Today's guest has worked with the likes of Big Crit, Sci High the Prince, Pow Wow, baby, Dante Higgins, and so many more, man. We'd be here all night. Not just that, she's also co-founder of God Level. We're going to get into that a little bit later. Everyone, give a warm welcome to H-Town's own Charity. What's good?
What's going on? Thank y'all for having me.
Yeah, of course. This is dope. Thank you for coming on.
I don't have nothing else to do, you know.
I don't think any of us have nothing
quarantine.
Else to do.
Quarantine.
Quarantine life.
Quarantine life. So I have a question for you, Charity. What was your introduction to music?
Well, my dad is a music junkie. He had the big Pioneer stereo. I don't know if y'all remember the Pioneer stereo. Had the record player, the tape player, and the
Absolutely.
CD player, you know?
Of course.
Like, he would always jam, like, Ohio Players, Bar K, Stevie Wonder, and barbecue. So that was, like, the thing. Fish Fry Fridays, every time he barbecued, which was often, we jam and stuff, like, it didn't matter. Like, my dad was always engulfed in good music. So that was my introduction.
That sounded like a really fun childhood. I'm not going to lie.
It was dope.
Awesome.
I mean, for real. Let's talk about what we really want to know. What was on the grill?
Oh, yeah. My dad's a grill master. So if y'all ever in Houston, y'all come through and you'll know. The ribs, brisket. You got to have the brisket. I've been to a couple barbecue places and they don't do brisket. And that's so weird to me, but I don't know.
Yeah, it ain't a real barbecue place if they don't do brisket.
If it ain't got no brisket, right.
Right.
I'll be in the building. All 6'3", 290 of me will be in the building.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, so that was your introduction to music. So what got you into joining the school band? Was it just something that you were genuinely curious about? Were you kind of forced into it? Like, what was going on at that time?
Well, I was always just staying active. And I think sixth grade, you couldn't play sports. I really wanted to play basketball, but in sixth grade, you can't play any sports. So I was like, I have to do something. So I just decided to join the band. And they put me on the clarinet. And it was so whack, but, you know. But, you know, it was... Ever since then, this is not that bad, but I thought I was going to be considered lame being in the band, just considering the kind of school I was at, but clearly it was an awesome outlet just to stay out of trouble, too, because I think about, like, the school I went to was in the hood, so it's just, that was my main thing, just staying active, so the band was, yeah, that's where I started with that.
Wait, so why did they choose the clarinet for you?
Because I said the cymbals at first. It was, I don't know why I chose the cymbals. And they was like, no, like the cymbals are bigger than you. Like, no. I was like, okay. So yeah, I was the clarinet and I was like the third chair. I'm so competitive. So I was like, I gotta be the best at it. But I didn't make it.
You're just trying to be the best clarinet player
yes,
in the school.
Couldn't
huh?
even hear us, but we was out there.
What do you mean it couldn't hear you? What you mean?
I mean, you can't really hear woodwinds during at a homecoming game. Nobody be like, oh, those saxes and clarinets going hard.
That's true.
Nah, they going for the drummers, the trumpets, the horn players and all that.
Mm-hmm.
When on this timeline did you decide, hey, I want to make beats? Like, what inspired that?
I didn't want to start making beats till, it's crazy, not till my senior year of high school, but I was super intrigued like what was going on behind the scenes during the, for one, the Bad Boy era just made the music industry look amazing. Diddy marketing got, it sold me, you know, as a kid and watching Rap City and, you know, 106 in Park and Aaliyah and Missy. When I first heard Up Jumps the Boogie, I've never heard nothing like that. I remember it vividly. And I was like, I want to be down with them. I want to be with the crew. I want to be with the Basement Crew. So that was just then. I was super intrigued, but I didn't think it was going to go into me making beats until my senior year. And I was a dancer at the time. I went for playing the instrument, and I was like, I want to be a dancer. And then I would study the arrangement stuff. So my homeboy gave me Fruity Loops, and it was just so I could make band arrangements. So that's where that's where beat making came in.
So describe your first beat for us. Like, what did that sound like?
Absolutely not. I will not describe.
Oh, come on. All of our first beats was trash, okay?
You had to start from somewhere.
Hot garbage, man. Trash. Join the game.
We've all
the
been garbage.
First beat wasn't that great. But I will say, I was trying to sample everything under the sun. Like, it didn't matter. I was like, I'm sampling that. I'm sampling this. It was, like, sample crazy. The drums were trash. They was hollow as hell. A lot of reverb on the snare because I thought it had to hit harder than everything else.
Yeah. He was really just trying to just make it loud and not mix it at all.
Oh, no. I didn't know anything about mixing. I just thought it was really going to come together. But it, you know.
Right.
So you're just having fun with this Fruity Loop stuff, right? How long did it take you to get serious about it?
So that was, what, senior 2006. And then I went to Prairie View College. And it's crazy because I was making it, still making beats as a hobby. And then that's when I met Kirk O'Bain. So we went to PV together. And it was crazy. It was an interesting year. Like, it was lit because it was Darrow. I don't know if y'all familiar with Darrow Ice Cream Paint Job.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. No doubt.
We were, like, in the same class, same business class at the time. So it was during that era, the Halle Berry, like, everybody went to Prairie View. So
wow, that's crazy.
That was during
crazy.
That time. And
y'all was lit.
And that's, Kirk O'Bain came out with Drink in My Cup. And we were all hanging out. So I was still trying to make beats. And he was like, you really over here trying to make some beats? And I was like, yeah, but they still wasn't hitting all the way.
Yeah.
So I'll try to make a long story short because, you know, so many people just that you meet along the way. But
oh, we got time.
Right.
So I was in college trying to make beats. And then when I saw, like, Kirko and Darrow and all of them, and just seeing the impact on campus life, like, the parties was so lit because that was just, the era was awesome and everybody was coming out of Prairie View. And that's when I met who I found out later on, and he is my cousin, George Young. George Young was an artist and producer, still is. And I would go to his spot every weekend.
Okay.
And he would teach me new things and about the beats and stuff. So I would just go home. And I stay at it like till 6-7 in the morning. And then I go back and be like, how did it sound? And he like, nah, that's not it. It's like, dang, I wanna get George on one of my beats. So I would keep doing it. That's when I started the beat battle. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna do this beat battle. And if I suck, I'm done. I'm just gonna focus on finding a career in the oil industry or something and whatever, live my life.
Which beat battle was
this? Oh, sorry, it's the Space City beat battle. This was before I knew about iStandard. I didn't even know other people were doing beat battles. I thought it was just Houston at the time.
Wait, what year was the Space City beat battle? Because
that was
this
2014.
Oh, okay. That's when beat battles were popping. That's okay. Dope. So what was, like, the process of you finding your sound? Was working with George Young, like, kind of part of that?
Yes.
Like, were you, what kind of influences, like, what kind of outside influences did you have while crafting your own sound?
I was just listening to so much, and my whole thing, like, I grew up on, like, old school, and then being from Houston, all I knew at the time was Zero, DJ Screw, SUC, because I'm from the Southside, so that was our thing. So it was more so, like, I wanted it to be soulful. Like, I wanted it to the culture of Houston, if that makes sense. Like, so that was my whole goal. Like, I wanted chords, I wanted funk, I just wanted a rich sound like Houston. And yeah, so that was my influence.
You were really trying to stay true to your roots in Houston.
Trying hard, because I was like, I have to work with Lil Kiki and Pow Wall and Slim Thug. That was my goal at the time. I wasn't even thinking big, like outside of Houston. This is my market. This is the culture. That was my main focus.
You were looking up to cats like, you know, Salih, like Mr. Lee.
Oh, yeah.
Salih and all them, like just that classic Houston
yes.
sound. I've actually always appreciated Houston for being themselves. And now even the sound of Houston is like kind of diversifying now.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
A lot.
You got cats like Travis Scott and then Kirko Bangs. Your boy Kirko Bangs. So how long like did developing your sound take? Or do you feel like you're still developing it?
Well, I feel like I'm getting it out. I'm finally working with artists to be able to make a sound, because chasing placements, you know, people are like, no, I want this. I want something similar to this. I want this and this and this. And I got kind of caught up in that. So it was kind of taken away from, like I said, my main goal of keeping that sound. So it took me a while. Like, I really had to learn, like, how do you even get a sound? That's not like the easiest thing to know that, like, I didn't even know I had a sound until people, you know, hear artists on the beat.
Yeah, definitely. It's just one of those things where it's like you have many different styles to you, but there's like a certain signature to it that everybody can tell it's you. It's a really tough thing to master. I'm still learning that to this day. Like, I'm sure everybody on this podcast could relate to this.
I know your sound though, Trox.
Absolutely.
I'm still working on it. It's always changing. Like, I'm just...
It's great. I know your drums. Hey, your drums. And I think soul sample, hard drums though.
So. Hey, I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
So what did you do in the meantime before your first beat battle, like right before you got into the Space City joints?
Graduated from college. I was just really working and trying to figure out my next move. I don't really know why I rushed to graduate from college, because I thought everything was going to be lined up for me, and that was not the case. Like, that was not the case. And then that's, I think, like 2 years after I graduated from PV, that's when I started working for the state. It's crazy. I was working parole at that. And then I was like, this not it. It got to be more to life than this. So that's when I was like, let me just go for music.
I mean, it's a lot of rappers in jail. You could have gave them beats.
God.
They had to have money on them books, though.
Okay.
I'm just being
silly. Yeah, it was a struggle trying to balance both, though. Because, yeah, it was a lot of rappers on my caseload. A lot of potential rappers.
Man, that's crazy. So I kind of know a little bit about your trail, your story with entering the beat battles. Let's go back to... when you thought about entering the Space City beat battle, what was your thought process? Did someone tell you about it? How did you even find out about it?
At the time, my homeboy, Kobe, he was rapping, and I was making a few beats for him, but I wasn't fully, like, confident yet, and I wasn't taking it. I was taking it serious, but I was like, you know, if it happened, it happened. If it doesn't, then whatever. But between him and my other homeboy, Courtney, who I was producing with, they were like, Space City beat battle coming up. What you gonna do it? And I'm just like, beat battle? Like, oh, I go to them, but I don't know about entering. And I've never seen no other females do it. I just don't feel super confident or comfortable yet. And they was like, just try it. Like, trust me, just try it. So I was scared. I'm not gonna lie, because I'm shy. I'm very reserved, so I don't like attention like this. So I was like, I gotta stand on stage and do what? Press play, then what?
That awkward moment.
Yes.
We all know. Like, what the hell?
I hate it. I was like, can I just send somebody else?
You would send somebody else to play your beats on stage.
While I'm in the audience. So I was really nervous, though, but... I was like, man, if I do this, this would be proving to myself that I am good enough. I just went for it. I was scared the whole way up until the beat battle, but I just went for it.
So I know that you said if you didn't do good, you would just be done with music.
Done.
Why would you put that much pressure on yourself to dictate, like, your potential whole career in something that you really want to do?
I don't know. It's something I'm still working on to this day. Like, I'm super hard
on
myself.
All or nothing.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm like that with everything. It's just like, go crazy or go home. It's just like, which one you gonna do? So I was like, man, I'm just gonna try to go crazy as much as I can at this beat battle. I wasn't, like I said, and my confidence wasn't there. I wasn't sure if I was dope. Like, I didn't believe it. Guess the beats that I was making at the time, I was like, they good, but I don't know if they beat battle good. Like, am I gonna really beat people? Like, that's a whole different life.
Right.
But yeah.
So as far as putting pressure on yourself, I know that we all tend to do that, but how have you worked on that? I mean, you've came this far. At this point, like, what is Charity's antidote to putting that much pressure on your life?
I'm just like, man, at this point, I'm just like, one day at a time. I'm an overthinker, too. So it's just like, I just have to shut myself up, my brain off, and just chill out. Because if I think too much, most likely I probably won't do it. Because it's just like all kind of stuff that go in my mind. Because I want to be successful so bad. And then let's just call a spade a spade. I'm scared of failure. Like, that's just what it is. But not as much as I used to. Now I'm more so like, all right, whatever. Like, I'm going to do my thing. And if people catch on to the wave, amen, let's go. But, you know, if not, then oh well. Like, but yeah, it took me a while to get to this point mentally.
Yeah, it's like you got to kind of train your brain to, like, keep going and not care too much about somebody else's opinion. You know, it's just a lot that goes into it. So you entered the Space City Beat Battle and you ended up getting second place. So you did way better than you thought you would have when you stepped on stage. Tell me how it felt getting second place the first time.
I was shocked. Like, it's crazy. I still have the text message where I was texting my mama, like, all right, made it to the next round. All right, made it to the next round. And then it was just all exclamation, made it to the finals. And she's like, oh my God. So I had my support system there. Like, I was shocked myself. Like, it's crazy. Like, I didn't think I was going to make it that far. I don't know why. I guess, like I said, just the confidence wasn't there. And then in between that, that's when I was getting second there, I was like, okay, well, let me try iStandard Showcase. I was like, that seemed like more of my, because I'm not really a battler. I'm trying to make records. So right. That's what they focus on. So I did my research on that and saw they were coming to Houston. And I came in second.
The first time. So doing all of these beat battles, how did you capitalize off of that? Mentally, how did it help you?
I really, really, really went and did my homework. Like, when the judges were critiquing everything, I was really taking notes, like literally taking notes, like put it in my phone, and I'll go home and really learn about mixes and live instrumentation and structure. So that's when it started to make more sense for me. And that's when I was like, okay, this is fun. Like, versus just making a beat. Like, it's like, okay, this is why I like this song so much, because they put this right here, then it just left. Like, for instance, Dr. Dre, he'll put something in there, like, whoa, 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 where did that go? It's just structure. So I think that's where it all started to make sense for me.
I think that entering beat battles, showcasing your music on stage, a lot of people take that criticism really personal. Most people don't actually do them again if they don't win, kind of like you had that self-criticism in the beginning, like it's all in or nothing. But tell me how you felt getting criticized on stage after not winning. I mean, getting second place your first battle, that's not bad.
Yeah, but it was still, you know, it was still, of course, like constructive criticism. I was just taking it as constructive criticism. And then you got to think about the judges. These are quality judges. It's not like your cousin from around the corner that really don't cut you. It's like, ah, it's all right, but can't tell me why. That's the thing. You can tell me why you didn't like it, or you feel this could be better. And then when I actually go apply it, and I'm like, wow, that does make a difference. Like, I didn't realize mixes made that much of a difference. That changed my life. Yeah.
Everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, you already know.
Yeah.
Terrible mix, and the whole beat is trash.
Trash.
And you just threw it all away.
Yeah. So they knew what they were talking. I mean, you got to think about it, Ken. You already know. It's like, you got the Cardo, you got S1, you got Willpower, you got Bink, you got Focus. I'm like, I can't even believe, man, when I met Focus, I was just done. So
yeah, I saw your face. I was like,
you was there. Yeah, I was so shocked.
It's funny because Focus is one of those down to earth people too.
Yeah, he's super humble, super down to earth, like family.
Yes, indeed. So it's just like, I mean, if they telling me, it's like, okay, I'm about to go home and try to fix it. So yeah, so it was easy for me with the constructive criticism because it was actually true. It was working after I applied it.
I know there was a certain point, like we've all came to crossroads when deciding to quit our job, when you have to take a leap of faith to elevate your career. Tell me about when you had to make that decision. How did you handle that? What was your experience?
Oh, it was tough. It was really tough. But I guess what helped me was having a support system. Like, that was super important because for a while, my mom, she didn't really too much care. She like, I didn't put you through college to do whatever this hobby is that you think you're going to do forever. Like, that just wasn't the vision. And then you got to think about it at the time. It wasn't anybody that looked like me. It wasn't many females. So it was a super male dominated thing. And so luckily, when the support system that I have, my family and my friends, and Sis was a major part of it too. Sis was just like, listen, you have a degree, you can fall back on that, but you should just do it. Just, I'm telling you, travel with our standard and, you know, network and just keep applying the constructive criticism to your music. And trust me, you can do this. Like, so I don't know. I let him kind of convince me a lot on that.
Yeah.
But after getting the support from my mom, and which took a while, I was like, okay, let's go. Let me just try.
Yeah, it's like the parents kind of solidify, like, oh yeah, you trust this decision. And it's just like, let me just go ahead and do it. I totally understand. So tell me about God Level. How did that come about?
Okay, so when me and Nate Coop, or OK Coop, when we moved to Atlanta together, we were already like, this was during the whole Saha process, trying to get on his album.
Yeah.
So networking through the beat battles, I standard specific, that's when I met Mark Bird. And he judged the beat battle that me and him won, that me and Nate Coop won. So after that, he was like, y'all are dope. I'm about to get y'all on this album for sure. Like, there's no getting around it. I'm going to get y'all on the album. Sure enough, he did. You know, it was a process. It was a long process, but we got on the album. And then since then, me and Nate kept working with Mark Bird. But when Nate left to be with his artist in L.A., Who Killed Kenny, he moved to L.A. and I was still in Atlanta and I was still working with Mark. So I like being a part of a team. I know people be like, you can do your own thing, but I just like the team environment. That's always been me.
Right.
And then just hearing the records that we were making together, it's just like, I don't want to stop. So me and Mark was just having like a general conversation and he was just like, man, I think I can do some with God Level. And I was like, I like that. Let's run with it. Yes. So it's just really like I ran with the idea, and Mark, you know, he's a super passionate person. So he was like, I really want to do this. Like, and I want you to be like my partner. And I was like, me? Okay. Let's just give it a try. Like, we keep making dope stuff. And I think we end up getting another placement together. And so, yeah, I was just like, why not? We keep working together. Let's do it. So that's how God Level came about. It's just, I don't know. It just came about.
I know over the last 4 to 5 years, I would say it's been pretty much a tight-knit community, especially with doing showcases like iStandard. And there hasn't been a whole lot of women stepping up to the plate to showcase their music. But can you share your experience dealing with all of the bullshit that comes with being a woman in this industry?
Well, I'm not going to lie. I was so happy when I saw your face.
Like, be transparent. Like, we're all with this shit today.
I was so happy. I was like, thank you, somebody that looked like me, somebody that get it, because I don't mind, you know, the whole male, whatever, male domination.
Right. Ooh, yeah.
That's cool, but, you know, I feel like I'm just as dope. I want my fair shake as well.
Absolutely.
I mean, this industry, for one, we already all know it's super cutthroat. It doesn't matter if you black, blue, green, female, male. If you're not dope, or if you're not networking and not likable, like, it's going to be hard. Like, this is a tough industry. The good thing is, and I'm sure, Candy, you can realize, get us in the room is being a female.
That's true. That's true.
Hear, but it's more so, but, like, the gift and the curse with that, it's more
absolutely.
So like, oh, I got to hear this. You know, like, on some, like, you just already assuming I'm about to be whack.
Yep.
So it's more so like, I gotta hear this. Nah, ain't no female. But then when it's time to press play, that's when everything's like get real quiet. Like, oh, wow, okay. She got something. So it's just trying to block out the extra noise that already come with the industry, trying to block that out, and really just trying to get that fair shake. I feel like it's tough. Already, then being a female, it's just like you have to be extra dope on top of everybody else. Like, it's a little bit more pressure, I think.
So what advice would you give any up-and-coming female producers?
Just be you and do you, but make sure it's quality. Make sure it's what you want to be represented by. Like, and to a female or whoever, like, just make sure the shit is dope and it's quality. Like, you don't have to have 50 million beats on your hard drive. That's cool if you do. But if you don't, I mean, if it doesn't sound like anything, it really doesn't matter. Like, it really doesn't matter. But I feel like I got into a lot of rooms because I don't know how to be anybody else or anything else. I only know how to be myself. Be you as much as you can. As I know, as tempting as it might be, people might want you to be something totally different, but nah, just be you and be likable. Don't be a asshole. Like, don't come in there, especially as a female, don't come in there with a attitude, because I know it'd be sometimes like, I know myself, I want to go off, but it's just like, nah, it's not worth burning a bridge, because let me not wear my heart on my sleeve and just let it roll off my back and just make sure my shit is dope when I press play. And that's when everything else is quiet.
Yeah, you do pretty good. Your poker face, game face is pretty good. So one thing we all want to know is, how do you continue to build and nourish relationships? What's the key to building relationships in this industry?
It don't always have to be about music. Like, for instance, me and Trox never worked together, never talked about it really. But if I see him talk about the Steelers, or he see me talk about the Steelers, and it's like, oh, Steelers,
Pittsburgh Steelers, yeah.
He can be my homie. It's just like little stuff like that.
Absolutely.
So that's how we got cool, and that's how I keep my relationships with people. It's just really genuinely checking up on people, because, like, at the end of the day, we all have something in common. We all trying to reach a common goal, you know what I'm saying? We all want to be successful. So every now and again, I just randomly check up shows and just really see how they are doing. And it doesn't always have to be about music. It doesn't, you don't have to, you can turn it off sometimes, because then it just started to look like, okay, that's the only reason why you're talking to me, but I'm human. I like other things too. I talk about it. Like if you see somebody, I don't know, Just Blaze or somebody tweet about some shoes or something and you like shoes too, why not say nothing about that? It don't have to be like, that's dope, but hey, let's link up though. Let's build. Like, no, that's not, that's corny. So just don't be corny.
Yeah, nah. Just be yourself and don't, yeah, don't be thirsty out here.
Right. Don't be thirsty.
Yo, what up, Il Brown? I'm thinking of signing up for BeatStars. What's your experience like?
Man, bro, BeatStars came through for me at a tough time, man. Of course, the industry is much different now. It gave me a platform where I didn't have to build my own website, and I was able to upload my beats and sell them and engage with the community, man. I had a crazy first month, man. Did like 4K in sales.
Wow.
And I've been a fan and a member of BeatStars ever since. Sign up on BeatStars to start making money with your beats. Go to bit.ly/beattheblock1. Again, that's bit.ly/beattheblock1. Peace.
So you had an incredible moment when you met Dre and you had the opportunity to play some of your beats. Tell us about that moment and that and how that story came about.
Well, like you said, keeping relationships, I've always kept a relationship with Focus. And Mark met Dr. Dre before me when he went to LA. I think that was during NAMM. And I didn't go to NAMM. I still haven't been to NAMM. But I didn't go to NAMM. And he texted me. He was like, Focus told me to go to meet them at Record One. I'm so nervous. And I was like, dang, I'm so jealous. Like, why didn't I go to NAMM? I could have been with you. So maybe like 2 months later, I forgot what we went out there for. But we, of course, I mean, we going to LA, we're gonna link up with Focus and just see how he doing. And you know, a day with Focus can turn into meeting Dr. Dre. I mean, that's who he worked with. So then that's exactly what it was. We were sitting in the studio with Focus and he was working on, I think it came out, he was working on some soundtrack at the time for, I think, a short film. And he had got a call and he was like, all right, he was like, all right, well, we about to get up and go to Record One. And I was like, excuse me? What you? He said it like it's nothing. So my stomach immediately started hurting. I was texting Mark like, did he just say? I was like, you think Dre gonna be there? He's like, most likely. Just make a playlist, have your stuff together. I was like, oh my God. I was so nervous, y'all. My stomach literally started hurting. I've never had that happen to me. I had to go get, like, chew some gum. I was really trying to get my nerves together because I'm like, it's Dr. Dre. Like, I don't know. Like, that's like Quincy Jones, Dr. Dre. So,
Word. We definitely understand.
We was in the car focused. He got up so fast. It was just like, hey, when Dre calls, it's time to get to work. So we left. And I was like, are we getting something to eat first? I got, can we stop by the gas station, need some water? And Mark was like, get it together. Just make your playlist. You dope. And it was that feeling again. It was just like, Lord, press and play. All right, I'm dope. So we finally pulled up. And it's crazy because the spot is super ducked out. Like, you wouldn't even know a studio was right there. It was like this weird little gate. It was weird. But anyway, so we walked in. And then we had to sign an NDA. I was like, oh, this is for real. He must be here. So signed that, the next thing you know, walk in and he's sitting right there and it was like, oh, like, oh shit. So this was when Golden State and the Rockets was going at like rivals or whatever. And I think the Rockets was playing at the time. I forgot who they were playing, but I walked in and then Dr. Dre introduced himself. Like, I'm like, I already know who you are. Like, but he's like, hey, I'm Dre. And it's like, nice to meet you. And woo-woo. So we were sitting there for a while and we watched the game. And that's when Harden did that nasty step back when dude fell and he waited till dude got up and he hit the three.
Oh, yeah, that was disrespectful.
Oh, it was so disrespectful.
You mean when he traveled?
No.
Yeah, when he traveled too. Yeah.
No, don't try to add that. No. He didn't travel right there. But nah, so that happened, and the whole conversation of Houston and the Warriors playing again, that was the whole conversation at the time. So we sitting there, I'm trying so hard not to fangirl out. And I was like, let me chime in every now and again. I'm going to wait on the perfect moment. So I was quiet for a while. I was quiet for a long while. And I was like, I don't know when the perfect moment is. I don't know when to chime in. And then so somebody, I think Focus was like, oh no, Dr. Dre was like, anybody want to bet on Houston and Warriors? It got so quiet. That was my moment. I was like, I bet. I'm from Houston. I'll go. And Focus was giving me like the eyes, like, no. And he was shaking his head, like, no, no. And I was like, yeah, I'm from Houston. You saw what Harden just did. And I got my little confidence up. And I was like, thank you, Rockets. Y'all, they were good at the time, even though we blew it. But yeah, so he was like, oh, yeah. He was like, how much you want to bet? I was like, what? Like, I didn't think about
how
that
much?
Part. Yeah. I'm just like, I got student loans.
Like, come on. I'm not in your category.
Right.
You gotta take a personal loan out to take a bet.
Like, what
you
right. talking about?
He was like, we can start at five. We can do five. I was like, hold on. No,
like $5?
Right. I was like, mom, let's, you know, we'll figure it out. He's like, you know what? We'll figure it out. But I'm not going to forget. And Bogus is like, man, he's not going to be a charity. He's not going to forget. You know, Bogus talks so soft. He's not going to forget. So from there, it was just like, okay, that broke the ice a little bit. And we started talking about sports. Then it went to talking about sneakers. Because, you know, he wear Air Force Ones every day. Like, all white every day, the same outfit.
All white.
Fazos every day.
So we started talking about sneakers, and Ty was in there. So Ty is a sneaker, super sneaker head. So we was talking about that, and Dre was like, "All right, enough of all that. Let's go to the studio." I was like, "Oh Lord, my stomach hurting again, Lord." I thought he forgot. So Mark was setting. He was like, Loki setting it up. He was like, "Yeah, you know she make beats too, right?" He was like, oh, word? He was like, all right. So we go in the studio, and I forgot who was playing music. I think Mark played something again, and he had grabbed maybe like two or three of Mark beats. And then it was my turn. I was just like, oh my God. So pass me the aux, and I hit play, and how Dre is, like, if he don't turn around, it's just like, it's not that hard. So you know how he sit at the boards, and you know, so he was like this. I hear play on the first beat. He was like, go to the next one. I was like, no, shit, I already know what that means. Y'all already know what that means. All right, go to the next one. But I went to the next one. He was like, he turned around. He's like, you made this? He's like, this mix is hard too. I was like, oh. So he's like, go to the next one. He's like,
hey, you know when he says that your mix is good, yeah, that's a really good sign.
That's a really good sign.
That was a great sign. And the crazy part about that beat that he liked, Nate Coop actually mixed. And I text him so fast. And, you know, Nate's so cool. He, oh, that's dope. I'm like, no, that's more than dope.
Dr. Trey.
Right. So it was cool from there. Like, he was, he gave me some constructive criticism. And another thing, a funny part of that whole visit was after that, first met Coco Sarai too. Y'all know who Coco?
Yeah, Coco.
Yeah, that's
sure do.
That's when I first really met her, because she was in there and she's like so confident and so dope. She is
a beast.
A beast. And she haven't even, I think she had just moved to LA, but she was like walking around like, I was like, okay, I need to get like Coco. But she was so cool. She was so nice. And he gave me some constructive criticism. And then when it was time for him to work on his stuff, the music was so loud, y'all. And mind you, like, I already been chewing the hell out of this gum because I was nervous. So I think I bit my tongue too many times. It was like vibrating my mouth. So I was in pain. So I put in the earbuds. And I'm trying to hold it together. And it's late, like we on LA time, so Atlanta, LA. I was really trying to keep it together. And so I'm listening to the music, but I got the earplugs in, so I'm trying to keep it together. And he said something, and I didn't hear him. He said something, and I was like, huh? He was like, you got earplugs in? I was like, I took them out so fast. He was like, you got earplugs in? He was like, you know, for me, music don't come through here.
It's a feeling.
To here. You gotta, yep. It has to, you gotta let it get to here. So don't ever, put. I got in trouble. I was so embarrassed. I felt like I got called out. I never put, I kept them earplugs though. I still got them. Cause that's the thing. But yeah, but it was a really dope moment. He's super, super cool, super humble. It's like, it's crazy. And he's still in love with music, like, a lot. Like, he likes to still touch every single thing. Like, if you're gonna go there, make sure you have your stems ready, because he's gonna want to touch it. So that was my experience.
That's so dope.
That's fire.
It's not many people that like get to experience that. You're one of the few in this world that say they did.
Yeah, I feel so blessed.
As you should. So after this awesome experience with Dre, right, you got to come home. You got to go back to normal life. What did that feel like? Did you feel like you were coming down from something?
Aha. No. Yeah. You know what? I came back like, I got to step my game up for real, because the way he attacks music is so inspiring. Like, I've never seen anything like that. I can only imagine that that's how it has to be being in the studio with Kanye, maybe. But they're like mad scientists. Like, when I say he hears everything, he hears everything. Like, it doesn't, he hears, his ears are so good, because it was like he was playing something. And I was like, ooh, I whispered to Mark, I was like, some hi-hats right there. He was like, hi-hats. Yeah, hi-hats. And then he heard somebody, he would listen, and then somebody said a lyric. He was like, put that, okay, yeah, come put that right there, but say it like this. So it was just like, I took all of that, and I was just like, I came home different. I was just like, yeah, West Coast. Something about that West Coast. They get it. It's just like from the mixes and to how they use people as instruments, it's so unmatched. So just seeing Dr. Dre do it, I get why the West Coast sound is the way it is.
Indeed.
I love it.
I think we all love it.
I mean, been loving it since, Uncle Delic, really.
I'm from the West Coast. I grew up on that. You know what I'm saying? Like, ever since N.W.A. came out, all of a sudden, like, there's hip-hop music that was mixed clean.
Yes.
Like, real clean.
Yes. It's unmatched.
So there wasn't any come-down from that experience? Like, there wasn't nothing, you didn't feel depressed after or anything? You just felt like you had to step your game up?
Yeah, I feel like I had to level up. And that's when I was really like, okay, I want an artist. Like, I need an artist. Because he said that was his great thing, like, Snoop and, you know, of course N.W.A., but he's like, that was his great thing. He's like, everybody needs that great thing, and that's an artist, and that's how you build your sound. And
did you ever find that artist?
Dante Higgins.
There you go. Tell us about him.
What's crazy is I met Dante during the beat battle era, like when I was doing Space City. And he was already popular around the city, because that was during the time it was like him, Propane, D-Lo, and they were all on the come up. They were on the come up, and I saw Dante at it was like some spring local concert something they had, and I was like, I'm gonna just say something to him, forget it. So, and I met him, he was so cool. He was like, but nah, he's so Houston. He's like, nah, you don't make beats though. Nah, I know you playing. I was like, I do. I got a beat battle coming up. So I was like, did I just tell him to come to my beat battle? I don't even know what's going to happen. And then he was like, you know what? I'm going to come. I thought he was lying. You know, I thought he really just shooting the shit. And sure enough, he pulled up to the beat battle. And that's when I came in second again. But he was just like, I see what you're trying to do. He's like, I'm gonna help you. He was like, I want you to do a whole album for me. I was like, already? I'm scared. Like, that was really scary. This sad. But he's like, yeah, I want to do a whole project with you. I hear what you're trying to do. I hear it. but I think I can help you. I can put you with the right people. And so, and sure enough, Dante kept his word. And maybe like a week later, that's when he hit me. He was like, all right, pull up to the studio. I'm over here with such and such, and you can learn this from him. And so, yeah, and then we really did a project together.
That's dope. That's real dope.
He really, really, really helped me with my confidence. And at the time, that's when he was signed to C Stone. You know, C Stone, who do the group?
Yeah, absolutely.
So.
Oh, yeah, 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 of course.
Yeah, that's how that happened.
So take us to a really depressing time in your career. Could have been a big placement or anything that fell through. How were you able to come out on the other side of that?
When I was in Atlanta, it was really depressing, honestly, after Hurricane Harvey, because I literally left maybe a month before Hurricane Harvey hit. So my parents went through it. Like, luckily they had flood insurance. A lot of people didn't, but luckily they did. But the house was tore up. They had to get, what's the little thing? And they had to get put in the basket and lifted in the helicopter because it was flooded so bad.
Oh, wow.
I don't know, after that time, and it was just like, I really up and moved. And then once you realize the placement game, excuse me, it's not that easy. So I was like, this is hard. You know, it's hard. Like, yeah, I worked with Houston artists, but just say I wasn't getting that same love and respect I was getting here anywhere else like that. Like, I just felt like I wasn't good enough. Like, what is it, my sound? Or, you know, and then Harvey hit, and then my dad was super sick after that. So it was just a lot going on. But what made me come out of that is really my surroundings, my environment. And that's when, of course, I had Nate Coop. Like, Nate Coop is the most positive person I've ever been around like that. Especially, like, no shade to males, but I'm just saying, like, he's the most positive male I've ever been around, because he doesn't let anything get to him. And it was a time he was going through it because his brother was killed by the police. But he still managed, like, he used music as therapy. So he was still going through that, and it was fresh. Mind you, this, and Candy, this is when we was traveling together.
Right. Yeah,
and
I remember
still
that.
Battling that case to this day. So really, him, he gave me books to read. He always had something positive to say. And then that's when Mark came into the picture. That's another one, like, super motivating. He's been through a lot and always have something great to say. So luckily I had a really good circle around me. And then with my parents going through Harvey and my friends and stuff, they were still like, you know, it'll be all right. It's nothing wrong with rebuilding and blah, blah. So that helped me too. So I'm like, you know what? That is, let me focus on the people who do fool with me or who like me and like my sound. And let me just keep working at it. Like, let me just on me and just stay prayed up and keep moving forward. Like, just don't stop. Just keep moving. And that helped me. Like, just not stopping. Just doing something. So that helped me a lot.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, of course, you moved to Atlanta. And, you know, you figured out that the placement game is, it's a crapshoot. You know what I mean? Like, it's really tough. How did you deal with that, like, you know, initially picking up, moving to Atlanta and, you know, pitching records back and forth? Like, what made you feel like, you know what, my sound is dope, and, you know, it's not me, you know what I mean? Like, what was that moment of clarity for you?
It was really when I joined forces with Nate. And after, when we were traveling with iStandard, it's like we were exposed to way more. It was like, huh, okay, it's not just about Texas. Because Texas is a huge state, and the market is huge. So you got to look at our legends, like Slim Thug, the Pow Wow, Kiki, all of them. Like, they made it, but all they have to do is a show here in Texas, and they straight. Like, you know what I'm saying? They wasn't worried about a big record deal. And, like, Slim Thug, when he went, you know, he did it with Pharrell, that was like, oh, that was a moment. It was like, wow, we never seen that. But it's because this market is just so huge, and you don't really think about what else is out there. So when me and Nate started traveling, And then when we won the beat battle in Atlanta, and we came back home, and then that's when it was just like, if we want to do more, we have to get out our comfort zone for real. And I was like, I don't want to work parole no more. Nate didn't want to, he didn't really like Houston like that. I won't say he didn't like it, but he was just like, I want to do LA or Atlanta. So it was like, well, if you go to Atlanta, I go to Atlanta. We a team, so I want to go. Let's see what happens. And we was like, we can treat Atlanta like the training wheel spot. So after Atlanta, we can go to LA.
I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you said that, because I was just going to be like, why not LA right away?
We was looking at the cost of living and stuff. So, and then we had, at the time, we had more connects in Atlanta.
Okay.
And that was during the time Focus was living in Atlanta too. So we was like, we got Focus. We got, you know, we start thinking about who here and, you know, who we can actually link up with. So, yeah.
No doubt. Got an ecosystem in place already. Makes sense. Right. Being that this is the, you know, Beat the Block podcast, we talk a lot about mental health here. So, you know, it's not something that's talked about openly. So when it comes to your mental health personally, like, what do you do to make sure you're good, to take care of yourself? Because the industry is just treacherous. We all know that.
Just really the little things. Like, I have to do what I love to do. And that's, I talk to my mom every single day. Like, that's just automatic. That's my best friend. So just little stuff like that, talking to her, or just nerding out on movies like Marvel, going to the movies, doing little stuff, just being human. That's what keeps me sane. And then another thing, I mean, I don't go to church as much as I used to, but I see the effects. It's not even just about church. It's just more so spiritually making sure I keep my faith in order. So I have to read something inspiring. I have to be inspired by something. It doesn't necessarily have to be something music related, but I have to watch I used to faithfully watch Kobe Bryant documentary, or I watch Defiant Ones. So it's just little stuff like that, and work out, which I need to start doing more after seeing Candy killing it, you know. So I'm trying. But it's just doing normal stuff, like hanging out with my friends. And when I went to my homecoming, I was like, okay. I felt refreshed. Like, every now and again, like, you just got to lift your head up, and because you'll drown yourself in this music so much, and you forget that you are still human. Like, that
absolutely.
You need to do other things. So that's really what keep me sane.
I like that. That's good stuff. So let's talk about your placement with Sci High the Prince. He's also a good friend of myself and Trox and Candy as well. Tell us the story about how y'all made that happen, man. We want to know the logistics. Leave no stone unturned.
I'll try to make a long story short.
I mean, we got time.
I've been trying this. I know, but I don't
want to. Yeah, we definitely got time. All
right, so like I said, Mark was adamant. He was like, you and Nate are dope. I'm going to get y'all on this album. And that was a year before the album dropped, maybe two. I don't know, a year and a half. But up until that, we were constantly sending stuff. And Saha, you got to think about it. Y'all already know, Saha is under Kanye. Like, always around Kanye. So he started to process stuff like Kanye would. So even if we would send something, it'll be more so like, yeah, that's cool, keep those drums, but I think such and such can do this, and I think such and such can do the 808s. And then it'll start becoming like everybody could do something, then eventually we'll be off the record. So it's like, dang, we done got knocked off the record because he done asked C-No to do the 808s, and then he asked Exclusive,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
Exclusive.
So, like, of course, and it's just called a spade a spade. It was like all the names was knocking us off the records. So,
I feel you.
We were sending.
We ain't sharing. Like, we're producers. Oh. We hate to share. You know what I'm saying? Like, come on.
Right. And it was becoming tough because we would get excited, like, oh snap, we on the record with Shawty, Shawty Red. It's like, oh, we got one with him. Oh, exclusive. Then it's just like, Mark, like, well, he liked this part, but he got such and such to do it. And it's like, oh. So it was becoming a super long process because Saha is super, super particular. Like, he's even particular about what snare. Like, I'm like, okay, bro, can you let us produce? You worry about the lyrics. But no, but he was like, I don't think it should sound like this. It needs to sound like more so like this, with an extra. And then he'll try to say something. It'd be like, okay, this was coming a lot. But it was...
He been around Kanye too long. I got stories, yeah. But he been around Ye too long. That's all that is.
Too, like, a long time, because it's like, even the description, he... Nah, you know what? Y'all let Ed run it through Fruity Loops and it'll give it that sound because it don't really hit like that. It's like, yeah, like, get it mixed. Like, it's gonna, if you get it mixed by the right person, trust, like, it's not even mixed yet, but it just turned into a whole bunch of that. So it was kind of frustrating. I'm not gonna lie. Me and Nate was like, we not getting on this album. And is this album even coming out? Because the song that we did, Don't Know Why, the sample couldn't get cleared. The sample didn't get cleared, I kid you not, maybe like 2 days before the album came out. So we didn't even think we was gonna make it at the last minute. And like every time Mark called, never be nothing good. It was just like, dang, what happened now? He said he was gonna get the such and such on it. But y'all, man, just keep sending stuff and just keep working on it. It's like, dang, but Don't Know Why it worked out. And the ads that we did, and Saha was like, man, I love that Chopped and Screwed. You know, you from Houston. I can't do his voice, but y'all know how to talk. Oh, yeah. You already know.
It's funny. It is. It's funny.
Luckily, he liked something that we did, because he was saying he liked it, but it just wasn't, I guess it just wasn't exactly fitting what he was hearing. But the thing was, we never gave up. It's just like, man, let's just keep trying. Like, let's just keep trying. So, man, we learned a lot from that. I learned a lot from that process.
I'm like MJ at 97 All-Star Game. I'm a 20-year vet. I ain't passing the ball. But I mean, I've been doing this so long, man. I just be like, oh, you don't like it? All right, cool.
Right, that was our first major placement.
It's
so, you know, we didn't know the time. We was like, come on. We close.
Right.
And that's when he signed the Sony deal. So he's finally putting out an album. And right. We about to make the album. Like, and it's Saha. Saha go hard. But
yeah,
it was tough. That was a process. But, and I wouldn't trade that experience for anything, because it just, that's when I really started building like tougher skin. And after dealing with that, it was just like, oh, everything else was a layup. Like, oh, this is easy. I don't do that.
Absolutely. You know, it's like, if you've been put through the old mill, I like to call it, through anybody that's been through that good music family tree, they are tough. We know you make a whole bunch of fire in the booth, Charity, but tell us about that time, and I'm trying not to laugh while saying this, that there was literally fire in the booth. What happened with the hair?
I thought, Candy, were you there?
I was not. I think I was in L.A., but I wasn't there.
Yeah, I don't know why I felt like you was there. Cause
I'm like, how did I miss that?
It was there and then. After me and Nate won, after we won the iStandard showcase, got to work with an artist. And yeah, we got to work with the artist. And
yeah, that was Candace Pillay. During that...
Yeah.
Oh, it was. Damn. Tell us the story.
Tito!
Come on now.
It was already like the session, the first day with her was already a lot. Like, I felt, I don't know, you know, some artists, they gotta have a lot going on in the room to, I don't know. That grinds my gears. I do not like a lot of people in the studio while we trying to actually get some work done. But, you know, she's the artist and whatever, whatever. So, but once so many people were coming in and out of, it's supposed to be a closed session. So the vibe, we couldn't really vibe with her like we wanted to. So day one. That was day one.
Oh, it gets better. I'm here for this.
That was day one. So we was like, man, hopefully this next session we get something done. I think was it the next day or did we end up flying back to LA working hard? But I feel like some other stuff happened, and when we played her the music that we made for her for that session, she was like, I'm really not in that vibe anymore. I was like, okay, well,
already?
You know. She's like, I'm not in that, because she was going through I think like a breakup or something or whatever. But so she was like, I'm really like in a super chill organic. She was going on and on and on and on. And I was like, we never gonna work with her. She's so dope. Next thing you know, it smelled like a beauty shop. I'm like, where did it come from? And Nate was like, hey, yo, Candace, I think your hair's on fire. She was like, it was just like so much chaos.
Why he say it so calm?
He was like, hey, yo, Candace, I think your hair's... It reminds me of Trey Songz and Kevin Hart. I don't know if y'all remember that.
Yeah, I saw that.
Oh, man.
But yeah, and that was the end of the session. So damn. We never got to work.
Clearly the end of the session.
That is indeed
some
how you make some
literally
heat.
Literally just don't work out. Right. Made some heat.
Literally. I hope she's doing well. I haven't seen anything from her in a while. But I hate we didn't get to work with her because she's super dope.
So y'all didn't cut nothing on her. That was technically y'all prize artist to work with, right?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that was the prize. And
it didn't happen.
Yeah, it really didn't happen. And I don't know, life just got busy for her, and then it's like, oh, okay. It just really didn't happen. Like she did scratch vocals, but it was, you know how R&B artists are, they just humming, like mumbling in the mic. It wasn't no real words, so that's all we got.
Damn.
I guess it all went up in smoke. It's crazy.
Right, literally. Well, Charity, you hit a lot of milestones in your career. I've been a witness to it. So tell us what's next. Tell us what you got cooking.
I'm trying to be like Dre. I want to do that great thing, and that's building it. So, I'm working with Dante. The album is basically done, but we're just trying to make sure it's right. And really in God level, like just building the brand, building my brand, and just continue to level up. So Dante Higgins, be on the lookout for him. And that's my focus right now.
Charity, what else do you have in the pipeline? Because you're one of them people. Don't play me. Tomorrow, you'll post placement. Just dropped.
I don't know.
And we'll be sitting here like,
only God knows.
Give us something.
You got
fans.
A placement with Madonna.
Only God knows.
I'm praying. I wish I could speak. I will see. I'm going to find out when you find out. Like, I'm just
okay.
Hoping.
I know that's how I go too. But yeah. I know. But I know you know.
I'm hoping. You know, when you think you know, and then you be like, what happened?
That's happened to me countless times.
You know what? On second thought, keep those cards close to your chest. We need
try to jinx. Definitely.
Charity, please tell us where people can reach you. What is your BeatStars page? What are your socials? If you have a BeatStars page.
No BeatStars page yet, but...
Nope.
We're going to make that happen. Let's do it.
Okay. No BeatStars page yet, but you can find me on Instagram, really all social media with at It's Charity Work. Went from Charity Yvonne to Charity Work. No more Cherry J. Blige, just Charity Work.
Cherry J. Blige.
Cherry J. Blige was fire, though.
It was, but people started calling me Miss Blige, and I was like, oh, dang. It's like in ruin. And hey, Miss Blige. It was getting real weird.
No, you don't want to do that.
I had to switch mine up. They were confusing Candy B with Cardi B. You know.
Oh, no.
So I was like, it's time to change it.
That's what's up.
It's charity work, everything.
Charity work.
Charity work. Y'all heard what she said. So that being said, we got to get up out of here, man, because the NFL draft is on. And I need me a six-wing fried hard with some mild sauce on it. So with that being said, this is the Beat the Block podcast. We'd like to thank our special guest, Charity, for being on tonight. And that's pretty much it. So we're going to get up out of here. My name is Ill Brown. I will see you later.
My name is Trox.
Yo, and this is your girl, Candy.
And we will see you next time.
Peace.
Peace.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Beat the Block. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. It helps the show a lot. See you on the next episode. Peace.